All right, so today is November 15th, 2016. That means that it would be the 14th of Mar Cheshvan, Tavshin, right? It's one day behind. Tavshin Ayin Zayin. So we are in Perek Tes, the last day of Perek Tes in Shmos, the last Perek of Parshas Ve'ira. Detailed over the course of Perek Tes are the Makos of Dever, Shchin, and Barad. So Dever gets described as the animal. Oh, whoops. So Dever gets described as the animals that suffering out in the field. Of course, those that were brought into the house ended up, those were brought into people's homes or into the barns were okay. Those that listed were okay. We had the next parak, that of the shchin, that were then thrown, everybody got the boils over them. And then the maka that gets the most extensive treatment is the Mak of Barad, that we get the mixture of the ice with the fire, and we actually, at the end, we have some sort of admission that comes from Paro, that Paro turns to Moshe at the very end, in Pasuk, where is it? Pasuk Chaf Zayin. Vayishlach Paro vayikra l'Moshe l'Aron vayomer lehem chatasi hapam. I've sinned. Hashem hatzadik v'ani v'ami harishayim. That Hashem is righteous and me and my people are rishayim. So maybe you can get rid of this, and I'll send you out, and you're not going to be able to. You're not going to stay here anymore, and you know may you daven that the barad be able to be removed. So what was it about the barad that seemed to get the special remark from Paro, that after I saw this makkah, this specific the plague of hail come down, so now I'm able to realize that A, Hashem is right, and B, we're wrong. So that even acknowledgement is one thing, but acknowledgement of he's right and I'm wrong, that's like a double acknowledgement. So that's issue number one, 1A and 1B. And then another issue that is kind of the premise for this essay that I want to work through a little bit in Or HaTzafon from the Altar of Slobodka. So his question is, why is it that when we say Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzi Sicha Mi'eretz Mitzrayim, that we know the first of the Ten Commandments is I am Hashem your God, and then Hashem says, oh, which God is that? The one who took you out of Mitzrayim. So why is that? Well, why is that the connection? So the Meforshim, the Rishonim on that say, they say a simple explanation is that, well, that's what just happened. So Hashem says, remember, this happened in the last month and a half. You were taken out of Egypt. I've given you man. I've helped you survive in the desert. And now I'm giving you the Torah. So it's an issue of identification. But he suggests that perhaps there is more of a recognition of a Kadosh Baruch Hu that comes out simply via understanding what Yetzias Mitzrayim was all about. That there is a greater understanding of a Kadosh Baruch Hu that we have earned in the last couple of weeks or months that one didn't have before. So this essay is found in Volume 2, even though it's only one book. There's three different volumes that were published separately, and then in the later years they just combined them all into one book. But it's still divided up by volume, and that the page numbers aren't combined. So you have to know that there's three volumes in the book in order to be able to find places within the Sefer of Or HaTzafon. I never saw it divided up until I found myself in Avas Torah in the Northeast. I noticed on their shelf in the Northeast they have the three volumes separated. I guess that's an earlier edition. Yeah. Of the Sefer Or HaTzafon from Nassan Tzvi Finkel, the altar of Slobodka, when the yeshiva was in Slobodka, and then when the yeshiva was in Chevron as well, he moved with the yeshiva from Slobodka to Chevron. So he explains that there's different levels of emuna, different levels of belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or different recognitions in what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. So number one is that Hashem created the world. That we know. You have to believe the psukim of Bereishis Bara Elokim Es Hashemayim Es Haaretz. In the beginning, Hashem created the world, the heavens and the earth, and that is that's very important. Now, the second thing that one realizes, and the Gemara makes this point in Maseches Sanhedrin, that Hashem created the nation, land, the the world for us. He created it for Adam. And not only did Hashem create Adam, so if he created it for one person, who is that one person? Adam and Rishon. So Hashem created it for that one person, so Hashem creates it, even will create the entire world even for one person, and that builds up the idea of Bishvili Nivra Olam, that Hashem created the world for me, that I am unique, and I'm special, and Hashem created the entire world for me. That's even a little bit more than what Mora Perman teaches her class at Torah Academy, where Mora Perman, maybe you had students who had more, children who had Mora Perman, right? And you had grandkids also who've had Mora Perman. So Mora Perman makes sure, and whenever a child has a birthday, so she tells everybody, she has the children say that this day 5 years ago, or 6 years ago, is the day that Hashem decided that the world couldn't exist without me. That's the line that she has the children say. So that's this idea, Bishvili Nivra Olam, that I'm deserving of the entire world just for me. And then there is a further idea, which we say also every day in davening, that Hashem continually creates the world. Now this is a newer idea. Where do we say that? So in the very beginning of the Birchas Kriya Shema, we say, HaMechadish B'tuva B'chol Yom Tamid Masa Bereishis. What does that mean? HaMechadish, who renews every day the Maisa Bereishis, the original ideas of creation. So not only did Hashem create the world, not did Hashem create the world for me, but Hashem continually is in creation of the world. In fact, if we say the Pasuk of, the Bracha in the Berachas HaShachar, we say, Rokaha Aretz Al Hamayim, who puts the land on the water. So who places, not who placed, not who did it in the past, but continues to place the land on the water, because there is a continuous act of creation that continues to go on. And then the final idea that we have is that Hashem creates, continuously is creating the world for me. So that is the fourth, he doesn't divide it up exactly that way, but that's, I think, the way that I would divide it up. So the final step is to realize that the world is continually being created for me, and that is the idea that is coming out of the idea of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that is the idea that that perhaps is being represented by Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hotzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim, I am Hashem your God, who took you out of Egypt, and demonstrates that I am A, created the world, B, continually created the world for you. I'm continuously involved in the creation of the world, and I will continuously recreate the world subjectively to every single individual. And how does one see that from leaving Mitzrayim? So if you take a look at many of the Makos, so many of the Makos have specifically this point, that Hashem, so Makadam, it's his first example, the idea of blood was that everything turned to blood, except for water that was owned by the Jews. And not only did water that was owned by the Jews remain water and didn't turn to blood, but the Jews were able to sell that water to the Egyptians in order to be able to make money off of it. So there you have a creation, and Hashem recreates it, so as he turns the water into blood, but had an exception. It's subjective. For some, it was turned into blood, and for others, it wasn't turned into blood. Similarly, the idea in Makos Dever, with the Makos of pestilence, v'liyamus mikol livnei Yisrael Dever, that the Jews didn't have any of their animals die. So, what does that mean? That means that even though there may have been this disease that may have been going around from animal to animal, it ceased when you got to Goshen, the land of Goshen, it didn't impact them. And not only that, but it did impact some animals in Goshen. Which animals did it impact in Goshen? If a Jew owned a animal that was, if a Jew was holding an animal that was really owned by a Mitzri at that point, so it impacted there. Similarly, if a Mitzri was holding an animal that was really owned by a Jew, so it wasn't impacted there. Remember we had, when we went through the Mefarshim Day, which apparently, according to Bruce, has beaten out Musar Day as his favorite day, which I was surprised to hear. You're okay with Musar Day. So remember, we came across this Orach Chaim, where the Orach Chaim said that if the Egyptians sold their animals to the Jew specifically to avoid the Makkah of Dever, it didn't work. And it raised the question of why shouldn't it work? That sounds like, they did Bedikas Chametz. That's what he did. They did Bedikas Behema, not Bedikas, they did Mechiras Behema in order to avoid the problem. So he said, well, it didn't work there. So I'm still not convinced. I'm not sure why that would be. If you did a full ownership, so you did a full ownership, you did a full Kenyan, so why shouldn't that Why shouldn't that make a difference? But either way, where the animal was wasn't what was relevant. It's whether who the animal's owner was relevant, which means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was manipulating the reality, or for our purposes, recreating the reality, depending on who the person involved was. I mean, everything is continuously gets created, and continuously gets created for subjective reasons, that each person needs. Yeah.
You say continuously recreating world,
right?
As opposed to sustaining world.
Yeah.
So is he actually recreating it from nothing, or is he adding new things into the existing thing?
Yeah. So in section two of this essay, which gets beyond the Makos, which gets beyond the discussion of the Makos that we're discussing, he says that is exactly what Hashem is continuously recreating the world. He talks about it in the context. Well, I don't think it's a lot to say from nothing, but I think what he's saying is that. He's talking about Chachma in this second section, which we're not really going to cover. But in the second section, he's talking about the wisdom that a person has, and that the wisdom that a person has that has been built up over time could be gone in moments. You're continuously relearning all of those things. So that's what he says is the idea behind the perhaps the most famous Gemara in Chabad circles, because it's the first Gemara that's quoted in Tanya, the idea of afilu, that the book Tanya, we've all heard of the book Tanya, right? The book Tanya was written by the Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, kind of an idea of philosophy and of Hasidus. So it starts, the reason it's called Tanya is because it starts off with the Brisa Maseches Nida Daf Lamed, where it says Tanya, That before the child is born, that he takes a shvuah in the mother's womb, and he says, "I'm the tihi tzaddik v'al tihi rasha." And then the next line is, "Afil kola olam omrim tzaddik ata haya beinecha karasha." Even if the whole world calls you a tzaddik, you should at least in your eyes be considered a rasha. You should at least consider yourself a rasha. So that sounds pretty harsh. Why would you consider yourself a rasha? It's simply not true. So he's like, "No, it is true, because at every moment you have to keep building it. Every moment you're in a way starting from scratch, and even though a person has learned their entire lives, at each moment they're starting from aleph beis." Now what the ramifications of that are, he leaves somewhat hazy. That might be in the third subject, the third section, which I wasn't able to really plow through, but at least that is what he is saying, that at least on a spiritual level everything is continuously being recreated. The here that I heard from Rabbi David Aaron gives the mushal of the parable of, I think I did this in shul once, where we had everybody close their eyes and imagined John, who lives inside of them, a person that lives inside of them. You weren't here for this, is early on. And so a person can create a person, so to speak, that is living. You can just imagine this person in your own world that you've created for that person. The only thing that Kadosh Baruch Hu can do that you can't do is that Kadosh Baruch Hu can give that individual Bechira Chafshis. God gives that person free will. You can't imagine a person and give him free will. Right? That's not something that humans can do. But you are continuously sustaining that person that you've created in your mind. Right? That existence is continuously contingent upon you continuously imagining that person. So the same idea is by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the whole existence of the world is predicated on the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu continuously wills us to exist. Yeah? Okay. And then he continues on and points out that certainly is the idea by Makas Barad. That Barad, the idea of the fire with the ice being put together, so that's something that shouldn't exist. And Rashi explained that's a nes besoch nes. That it was a miracle within a miracle. Number one, the Eish Vabarad Muravim, Vabarad Mayim, Vahulasos Ratzon Konam Asu Shalom Beneihem. That you have the fire and you have the water, and they generally don't like each other, the fire and the water. But in order to do the will of a Kadosh Baruch, they made peace amongst them. So what happened there? It wasn't that the fire and the water decided these things. It's that a God, so to speak, changed the reality of fire and water for that moment, so that fire and water would be able to unite for the common purpose of imposing a makkah, of imposing the plague upon the Mitzrim. Yes.
Did the fire do anything, or is it a light show? I mean, hail
destroyed crops. And
right.
What did the fire?
I thought it started fires.
Oh, did it? I didn't know all it was. Makes sense.
Sounds like it could.
Okay.
Yeah. Right, so, and then the other comment, so what's the nes besoch nes? So he said, remember, I thought the nes was just simply that it happened in the first place, meaning that these hails were, these huge hailstones which aren't supposed to otherwise exist. But no, everyone seems to be searching for the second miracle, that if the fire and water are together, that's miracle number one. What's miracle number two? So he says miracle number two is that it was only in Mitzrayim and wasn't taking place in Goshen. It wasn't the land of Goshen. So miracle number one is that the fire and water could be put together, that you have this new Bria, that you have this new creation that otherwise wouldn't have been created otherwise. And the second level is, and it didn't fill the sky of the entire Mitzrayim, it only filled the sky of all of Mitzrayim minus Goshen. So it is this. So it's both of these themes together. Is the continuous recreation of the world, that generally the world is created where fire and water don't work together, and here fire and water is working together. And then the second level is, and it is subjective, that it only impacted the Egyptians and didn't impact the Jews. And there is a. Yes. Right, and then finally, by Yamsuf, certainly it made the difference that when a Jew walked in through the Yamsuf, it turned into dry land. And when a non-Jew, when the Mitzrim walked through the Yamsuf, it obviously did not remain dry land. He points out the idea that this idea of the fire with the ice that are put together, that all of a sudden now it works. So there is a Gemara in Chagiga that makes the following line. So the Gemara in Chagiga has in the first parak, yeah, towards the end of the first parak, the Gemara in Chagiga has these sections about what people are permitted to learn, and you know, learn and things that people shouldn't learn, the idea of Maisa Bereishis, the idea of Maisa Merkava, creation of the world. The Merkava is the image of what a Kadosh Baruch Hu's throne room looks like. So the things that aren't supposed to be necessarily taught publicly. But the Gemara there has a line because it talks about all these esoteric things. The Gemara there says, "My Shamayim, what is Shamayim? What does the word Shamayim mean? What does the word come from?" So the Gemara in Chagiga says, "The Sisatana Ish Umayim. Shamayim equals Ish Umayim. Lamed Sheviya Kadosh Baruch Hu V'tarfen Zeh B'zeh V'asa Mehen Rakia." That we learn from here the idea that Kadosh Baruch Hu put them together in order to form the sky. What does that mean? Put them together, forming the sky. Ash and water are not supposed to be working together with one another, but Kadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to make them work together with one another. I mean, we shouldn't just assume that just because that is the reality that we see, that it's not able to be, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu could just change it and create a different reality. So perhaps that's the theme of what Shamayim means. While the earth is our, you know, that we assume the world is functioning in what we would consider to be a natural, normal state. The idea of Shamayim is that it's where Ish and Mayim are fitting together, where anything is possible and anything could happen, and we don't necessarily make assumptions that, well, this is the way things are, and these are the way I assume them, I expect them to be. It's going to always continue to be in that particular way. And doesn't just work with regards to the whole creation, but even works with details, that even details can be split up. So he quotes here an interesting halakha that appears in Or HaChaim. In Or HaChaim it says, if a person is fasting in order for rain to come. So we actually last year came across a few gemaras like this for various reasons, about if there was a fast that was declared in order to get it to rain, and all of a sudden it starts raining in the middle of the day. So what happens if it starts raining in the middle of the day? Do you have to continue the fast? Do you not continue the fast? It depends what time of the day it happened, but fine. So the Shulchan Aruch also makes a comment that let's say you're fasting and the rain begins to fall. So yesh levarich bracha hoda b'nusach kazes. It is appropriate to make a bracha in the following way: modim anachnu lach al kol tipa v'tipa sharadas lanu. So I give you thanks for every drop which you drop upon us. So what is the point of saying for every single drop? Because you recognize it's not just rain. Rain is made up of drops. So similarly, at that point, when one is when it hasn't rained and one is davening for rain, and all of a sudden it rains as a result of somebody fasting, as a result of our tefillah, as a result of our fasting, and we're permitted to recognize it as that. So we turn to Hashem and we say thank you. And at this point, we recognize that it's not just you that creates the whole world and just functions in a natural way, but I recognize that each and every drop that comes down ultimately can be traced back to you. That yes, to the outsider it looks like rain. If you look at it at the radar, it's the whole eastern Pennsylvania is being covered by rain. But we have the ability to recognize, but yes, it's true that rain is the klal, rain is the general rule that it seems to be covering everywhere, but we recognize it as individual drops as well, that each individual drop is also coming from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So with that, so then we can take a look then as to, okay, so what was it about Barad that got this remark from Paro? That Paro said, now I realize that you guys are right and I am wrong. So the Das Zakenim, Mibaliatos, Das Zakenim is a commentary that always appeared on the page of the Mikros Gedolos, in which case we would have been learning it a lot, except in the new big fat red editions that I use, it's in the back of the, so you have to trace it back in the back, so that's why we don't learn it as much. But the Das came close in that pasuk that is after what happened in Barad. That was when Moshe told them, you know, the Barad is going to come tomorrow. And remember, we learned, why did he say the Barad is going to come tomorrow? Why don't you just let it start coming today? Because they needed a chance to tell the servants that it's time to come inside, that don't stay outside, but rather you should come inside. So Das Akinan comments, Amar lo Hashem hatzadik she's hiru hetev, v'ani v'ami harishayim, that Hashem is very righteous, he treats people well, and me and my nation are the evil ones. Why? Because the evil ones just left their animals outside and didn't believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Riva, however, a different Rishon says, no, Hashem is righteous and we are Rishayim, because we see that Hashem planned it so that the animals should be able to be saved. That means Hashem is righteous, and we didn't care so much about the animals, but Hashem, even Hashem, cares about the animals. That Hashem even took care of those particular individual things. So you can plug that into this idea as well, that Hashem is even careful, not just about the Jewish people, not just the B'nai, Hashem even has rahmanas, Hashem even has mercy, even on animals and on all the creation. Hashem has the ability to sort of manipulate nature accordingly. So he concludes with the idea, this the Chidushi Halev concludes with the idea of that's a great thing to teach people, to recognize that the Torah doesn't just care about the Jewish people, the Torah doesn't just care about God. Kadosh Baruch Hu, God cares about, the Torah cares about all individuals and all animals and all living things, etc., etc. But I would then go even further and say that Paro at that point recognized from the Barad this idea of A, HaMechadish B'tuvah B'choyim Tamid, that Hashem is constantly recreating the world, that all of a sudden now there's this new existence of fire and water that can go together, which Hashem created for that particular time. And Hashem has the ability to manipulate it for specific people and not for others. So that's what Paro realized. Paro realized, okay, so you're right and we're wrong. You're the ones that are getting these, that are being saved from this, and we're the ones that are being afflicted with this. But perhaps you could go even further and realize that what was Paro's original, not really complaint, but his original argument against Moshe. Moshe came to Paro and said, you know, we have a God and we'd like to go out and serve our God. So Paro said, I don't recognize this God of yours. What was this? What was he referring to? So as we pointed out then, you have to look at the names of Hashem. What are they talking about? Paro recognized the idea of Elohim. Paro recognized the idea that there is this God that's out there, that's separate, that judges and is the king and rules the entire world. He recognized that. And it was, and to his mind, it was just a question of which God was more powerful, which of these foreign, outside, not involved gods is more powerful. But at this point, Paro turns and realizes that it's not just about this, that the Jews don't just have Elohim, this God that's distant, but he also recognized that that B'nai Yisrael has this God that is Yud Kei Vav Kei, that God is and always will be. That God didn't just create the world, but God continues to create the world, and God continues to manipulate the world, and God continues to be involved with each and every Jew. That God is willing to do that for the benefit of His children, and for the benefit of those that are willing to to recognize the greatness and the closeness of that HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's perhaps what he's referring to here when he says, Hashem Tzadik, which is the word that he uses, Yud Kei Vav Kei. At this point, Paro is finally coming around and realizing that it's not just that the Jews have this very powerful God who's their king and captain, general manager and owner who lives outside, but rather that they have this powerful God that is living amongst with them. And we're the Rashas, we're the evil ones who don't recognize that. We're the ones who don't buy into that. And therefore, you're the ones that are zocha, that merit the ability, the idea of bechira chavshis, and we're the ones that are, not bechira chavshis, that earn the right to have hashkacha pratis, that have the right to have hashkacha pratis, God caring for each and every individual, and we're the ones that aren't zocha to that. We're the ones that are the rishayim that don't recognize the specific, unique, subjective, and special role that a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that God has the ability to have with each and every individual. Right.
Oh,